My name is Renee Carter. Formerly, I was a senior fellow and also medical advisor at NRC. Right now, I'm a fellow at Families USA. But I was worked with Diana for several months, and this is when we came up with this kind of presentation to do this. So, historically, people of color have shown distrust toward United States institutions of education, justice, and even medicine. And as a result of this distrust, African Americans tend to avoid these institutions. A lack of inclusion of people of color in biomedical and behavioral research contributes to health disparities. African Americans and other minority populations have shown participation in clinical trials for fear of being subjected to medical exploitation. Health disparities that are racially and ethnically characterized have become a major focus of the research and healthcare communities. Chronic diseases such as asthma, diabetes, hypertension, and certain types of cancer carry a disproportionate burden in communities of color. Here are a few of the most commonly known health disparities. African American women are 36% more likely to die from breast cancer when compared to non-Hispanic white women. Hispanic women are 2.2 times as likely as non-Hispanic white women to be diagnosed with cervical cancer. African American women are 1.6 times as likely as non-Hispanic white women to be obese. Hispanic women are 1.6 times as likely to have started treatment for end-stage renal disease related to diabetes as compared to non-Hispanic white women. And African American females are 1.4 times as likely to die from heart disease as non-Hispanic white women. Clinical research has been instrumental in providing diagnostic and treatment modalities for many of these illnesses. However, disparities still exist. The scientific and medical communities admit that only through appropriate participation of diverse ethnic and racial populations will health inequalities be eliminated. There are also disparities as far as drug reactions. Disparities in therapeutic response can be encountered when various ethnic and racial groups take common medications. This phenomenon is believed to result from differences in metabolism, clinical effectiveness, and side effect profiles. Genetic disparity is a major contributor to be observed in the variability of drug effect. Here are some of the examples where response to medications is shown to differ along ethnic and racial lines. Patient response to antituberculous drugs like isoniazid is dependent on that individual being a fast or slow metabolizer of the drug. Clinical evidence has demonstrated that 7 to 43% of Chinese and Japanese individuals are slow metabolizers compared with 52 to 64% of whites. This would suggest that in Chinese and Japanese tuberculosis patients, the dosing of isoniazid may not be adequate to eradicate the infection. Another example is found with the use of angiotensin-converting enzyme inhibitors in treating congestive heart failure. Utilizing this medication as a single agent to treat heart failure in African-American patients may not be as effective when compared to whites. Two antidepressants, fluoxetine and paroxetine, are potent inhibitors of the cytochrome P450 2D6 enzyme. This enzyme is essential in the metabolism of psychotherapeutic drugs. Asians tend to metabolize drugs through this system more slowly than other ethnic groups. Therefore, when treating depressed Asian patients, it has been suggested to start them at least half the customary dose to avoid significant side effects. And lastly, in the treatment of Alzheimer's disease, Tacrin is less effective in persons carrying a specific APOE gene variation. This variation occurs in 20 to 30% of African Americans and Africans, compared to 5 to 10% of Asians, making Tacrin not necessarily the best choice in the treatment of Alzheimer's disease in African American patients. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. As far as during slavery, of course, everybody knows about medical exploitation that was done at that time. This is Dr. Sims, who was a gynecological surgeon in the 19th century, performed several surgeries, up to 30 on one woman, without anesthesia. And everybody knows about the Tuskegee experiments that started out in the 1940s, went on for 1930s, went on for some odd 40 years, and was stopped only after a public outcry ensued. And just, again, remembering how the ethical implications of all this is concerned. Now, looking at some of the things that we have tried to do to kind of correct some of these ethical discrepancies. Women and people of color are often excluded from or not actively recruited for clinical trials. Therefore, many studies were conducted primarily with white men. As a result, there is limited medical information about women and people of color and the safety and effectiveness of research for these groups. And in response to the atrocities that were conducted on the African-American population in the past, the number of African-Americans willing to participate in clinical research trials has declined. The National Institute of Health addressed these prior exclusionary policies by creating the Revitalization Act of 1993. This important piece of legislation was signed by President Clinton. The Revitalization Act affirmed the need to include minorities and women in clinical research studies. It established the Offices of Research on Women's Health and Minority Health in the Office of the NIH Director. It also instructed the Director of the National Institutes of Health to ensure the inclusion of women and minorities, particularly in Phase 3 clinical trials. The Act goes further to require that the study design must provide a valid analysis of the differences that the study may uncover, may uncover for minorities and women. All right. However, the inclusion requirement of women and minorities did not apply if it was considered inappropriate because of the subject's health status, the purpose of the research, or by discretion of the director of NIH. The exclusion is also deemed acceptable if the scientific information demonstrates that no significant difference exists in the effect of the intervention on minorities or women. The Revitalization Act only applies to NIH-sponsored research, and as you all know, clinical research is presently being done more in the private sector, and these guidelines would not apply. The FDA has also issued guidelines in 1993 that call for clinical trials to be analyzed by gender. However, these guidelines are not enforceable. They are only recommendations to investigators and research institutions. The FDA Modernization Act of 1997 required the FDA to look for the inclusion of racial and ethnic groups in clinical trials. The FDA Modernization Act stated that the Secretary of HHS will directly consult with the Director of NIH and representatives of the drug manufacturing industry to review and develop policy for the inclusion of minorities and women in clinical trials. However, the FDA Modernization Act does not regulate the manner that clinical research is carried out to require that certain populations be included in the research. It only requires sponsors to annually report the number of minorities that are enrolled in clinical trials. This act also subsequently led to the FDA's 1998 regulation of investigational new drug application and new drug applications, also known as the demographic rule. This act required sponsors completing new drug applications to submit safety and efficacy data by gender, race, and age. However, it fell short of mandating that racially diverse participants be included in clinical trials. It also does not apply to medical device applications. In 1999, the FDA issued a guidance recommending the use of population pharmacokinetics to find differences in drug safety and efficacy among ethnic and racial subgroups. Today, the FDA frequently approves prescription drugs and medical devices that have not been studied in people of color. As a result, companies have no incentive to recruit minorities for their studies. Although these medical products are proved as safe and effective, there is often no information about whether they are safe and effective for minorities. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have joined their sister regulatory agencies in enabling minority and women in participation in clinical trials. The CDC policy is similar to the NIH guidelines for women and ethnic and racial minorities in clinical research. One significant difference between the CDC policy and NIH guidelines is that the CDC offers solutions for low participation rates and directs researchers to actually identify information gaps pertaining to health problems specific for women and minorities. However, with the before mentioned governmental and institutional guidelines in place, they are not sufficient as far as increasing the number of minorities that participate in clinical research trials. According to the NIH, the number of minorities participating in trials funded by the federal government decreased from 41.3% to 29.5% between the years 1997 and 2001. The following 2 years, the number increased to only a high of 38%, but this was still below the 1997 level for minority participation. Now, some of the reasons that research subjects will give for not participating in clinical trials is that they're concerned that participants are considered that they're gambling with their health and they're being treated like guinea pigs. One Harvard University doctor, Wayne Greaves, commented that many blacks and Hispanics see research at universities as ivory tower experimentation that is more for the sake of advancing researchers' privilege than improving patients' care. There's also racial and ethnic minorities have been less likely to participate as compared to non-Hispanic whites. A national survey found that 85% of respondents were unaware that even participating in clinical trials was considered a treatment option. And there exists an inability to access enrollment information for people to participate in these clinical trials. Most subjects believed that informed consent provided legal protection for the researchers and negated their rights in the study. There were also cultural barriers. Many individuals from various racial and ethnic backgrounds do not share the views held by Western medicine. For instance, they thought that their families should be more involved in the decision-making process. They had different religious and beliefs and practices, and the use of traditional healers and alternative medicine for health management. There were also reasons given by the investigator was saying that the eligibility criteria were very rigorous and they were standardized, and they may exclude patients who had multiple health problems, and many of these were minorities. They were also concerned that African Americans, usually from lower socioeconomic backgrounds, may be less likely to follow drug schedules and not complete treatment journals, etc. There was also a greater number of women would be needed as far as minority subjects to really have a reliable study. And women of reproductive age were usually excluded because they were concerned with danger to the fetus. Now, the meat of the discussion, the reasons why I would really strongly urge that women of color participate in clinical trials. One, it strengthens the reliability of the clinical study. Two, it increases the ability to generalize research results. Three, it decreases and eventually eliminates health disparities. Four, identify positive and negative effects of treatment that are common in communities of color. Five, as a result of federal policies, better informed investigators and institutional review boards, ethical abuses in human research are less common. So my recommendations to hopefully increase the participation of women of color include the first suggestion is mostly a policy change, that we require the FDA to include diversity in clinical trials in insufficient numbers to allow for separate analysis of different racial ethnic groups to determine if a product is safe and effective in that group. An example of this discrepancy is best seen in breast cancer. Research has demonstrated that African-American women are more likely to have estrogen receptor negative breast cancer. This makes the cancer difficult to treat and virtually resistant to hormonal therapy like tamoxifen. Perhaps if African-American women had been included in the FDA trials, more effective treatment for breast cancer in this ethnic group would have been approved instead of the drugs that are primarily used for estrogen receptor positive breast cancer that is predominantly seen in white women. Secondly, the subject and family members should be continuously reminded that all stages of the study are voluntary. Thirdly, ensure honest and respectful communication between the research personnel and subjects. And fourthly, assurance that the subject has full knowledge of the procedures and outcome, and also train research staff in the cultural nuances of communities of color. Also, over-recruiting of women of color to meet study goals. And then you can see the rest here, include a lay leader from the minority community, and also encourage physicians to actually refer their patients to be included in clinical trials. I kind of rushed through this, but if you have any questions, don't hesitate to answer. Thank you very much for allowing me to participate in this panel.